Welcome to Object Matters, the podcast of the Chow Chak Wing Museum. My name's Craig Barker and I'm the Head of Public Engagement for the museum. The whole aim of Object Matters is to talk with a guest each episode about their personal relationship with an object or a series of objects within the museum collection. For this episode, I'm really excited to be joined by Sarah Goffman, a cultural producer and the artist responsible for our new exhibition that has just opened called Applied Arts. Sarah, thank you for joining me on Object Matters.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
Now, it's really, really exciting because one of the things we will talk about is your exhibition and your processes for creating that work in that exhibition. But firstly, can I ask you to talk more generally about your art and your practices? Could you describe what it is that you are trying to achieve and what are the processes that you follow?
Well, I guess it's many and varied. So maybe for the last 30 years, I've been practicing as an artist, and practice doesn't make perfect, but it certainly takes you on trajectories that you don't expect. I guess I'm quite a responsive artist, so I might have inherent things that I want to display and reflect on and sort of react about, but there's also a response to what is happening in the world today, and it's very much about being in a place in time and having my eyes seeing what they do and then attempting to mirror that into a gallery situation or somehow. I mean, being an artist is not just what you make but who you are and how you see the world. So I've always got things to say and express, and I guess the visual medium is pretty much my best way to
find that self-expression.
Yes.
When you talk about how you want your work to mirror the world and, you know, current debates and conversations, what are some of the things that you're drawn to? What are some of the bigger questions of the age we live in that you find yourself being reflected in those work?
Oh, that's a very hard question, Craig.
Sorry.
Because, you know, you wake up in the morning and, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have 20/20 vision, then you will see light and darkness and colour and, you know, the most simple things. I guess as I've gotten older, I've appreciated more of the minimalist parts of life, but maybe as a baby, a dust mote is just as fascinating as a conceptual artist's perception of a dust mote. So being able to be still in the world and to see what there is. But I mean, the political situations, the environmental, ecological, these are things that really disturb me and anoint my works. But like I was telling you, I come from a theatre background, so I kind of see my works as props.
That relationship between performative arts and visual arts in the broader sense, how do you find that interplay? Has that informed you right throughout your career?
It really has. I make sort of fakes of things, as you'll see in my show, and sort of copies of things. And I believe that I myself am a copy of things. I'm a copy of everything that I've encountered, things that I love, people that I love, and plays that I've read or books that I've read. I take on those characters. I don't really know who I am, but I certainly have figured out things through other people and other artists and musicians, poets, everything that you assimilate then comes back out as an artist.
Well, talking of that journey, could you take us through your career? Where have you exhibited and where have some of the places you've actually been to practice?
I guess a lot in Australia mostly. So I've been exhibiting in Sydney mainly, a lot of artist-run initiatives and museums, galleries, institutions. Over the years, it's gotten easier for me to put my work out there, luckily. But I remember when I first started out, Like it was the Palace Cafe on Pitt Street.
Yeah.
Tried to make my work available in whichever, like I say yes to everything. And so I'd enter prizes or try to exhibit wherever I could. I've been in some great shows, group shows, yeah. And also endeavoured to make stuff overseas. I've done a lot of residencies. 3 times I've been to Japan on residency, which have been quite life-changing and informed my aesthetic practice and been really important to who I am now.
Well, I was quite keen to get that background because we'll talk about this a little bit more later on in the episode, but I understand that some of the works in the Applied Arts Exhibition currently on in the Chow Chak Wing Museum reference some of the work that you've done in the past, don't they?
Yeah, there is actually some work that has been updated that I did back when I was at art school. So I'm always recycling my works into other shows, and sort of some of the plastics that I collected in Japan have made it into this Penelope Gallery. So that was more than 10 years ago that I was there. I went there on a residency to collect packaging because the Japanese are known for their fantastic packaging. And so I collected a lot of PET bottles and other ephemera, and I've been working with those ever since, as well as whatever I can find in Australia. I'd love to do a global garbage sort of trawl where I went and collected plastics from all over the world.
Well, it's interesting to think that the way that the modern global economy is established, that often the packaging is far better travelled than the consumer consuming the product that the packaging has come from.
I find it fascinating that we import these PET bottles from, it's not just China, the Americans make an enormous amount of plastics. And I guess, I mean, it harkens back to the petrochemical industry. I completed my doctorate a few years ago and I wrote quite extensively about the Silk Road and the past Silk Road, but also the current one of trade carrying these kind of lethal materials around the world. And I mean, we might all be familiar with some of the cargo ships that have gone down, and I think only last year there was one that lost some containers that were filled with plastic containers, takeaway containers, that washed up on our beaches, Newcastle to Sydney. And I happened to be on the beach finding some of these containers, and the synchronicity was just overwhelming to me that there was the garbage, well, new, single-use plastics washed up on my beach.
Yeah.
And this was the day that I chose to go out there.
You know, in terms of your journey of your career, when were you first interested in this idea of taking garbage and refashioning it and recycling it and reappraising it so that it created something new and created something aesthetic, to have that commentary both on the issue of recycling and garbage, but also, I guess, more broadly about human impact upon the world around us?
I think I was only a teenager when my parents went shopping and brought back the shopping in these heavy-duty plastic bags that they then used as garbage bags. And I saw the material is, you know, very strong and resilient. And I think I knew back then, I'd read Silent Spring.
Yes, right.
I knew this was not something that you could just bury. And it was a valuable material. You go to any sort of less developed country and those plastic bags are used and reused. It's a suitcase. Like, it's not just something that you throw away. So I felt very strongly that there was, you know, I don't do it as an ecological measure. I do it because it's a material that we're surrounded by and inundated by.
Yes.
We've ingested these plastics. We've got microbes in our bodies.
Yes.
We come from a society that still, for the convenience of all those objects, is still producing them. And of course, governments are phasing out these things. However, there's still an abundance that, I mean, especially in the COVID times, the amount of takeaways going on.
Yes, and masks, disposable masks.
Masks is so alarming. Mm. And it's something for convenience. And so it's looking at that.
I must say, I mean, I don't want to labour the point too much because I want to talk more about your exhibition and your relationship with objects, but just this sense of collecting that waste and so on, you know, as an archaeologist myself, that perspective that right throughout human history we have disposed of things that we've not wanted before, but often most of human history, objects have been reused. Single use is a very new phenomena. And you look at sort of a site where you've got lots and lots of broken sherds of pottery or so on, the scale of that compared to the scale of the mass production and the mass waste of the plastics that we talk about now is really quite extraordinary, given that you're often using ancient Asian and ancient Mediterranean works as an inspiration. Do you ever ponder that relationship between humans and waste and how much it's changed?
Well, I think you said yourself that in the museum they collect garbage as well as...
Well, it is.
The gold.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, archaeology, everyone thinks it's Tutankhamun's gold mask, but actually, no, it's not. We're collecting waste that people have thrown away because that's the truth of human society and human interaction. And I guess this is what you're capturing as well.
I guess so. I mean, it's sort of the identity of the person intrigues me. Who's used this before? The DNA on a certain bottle. I used to call myself a forensic garbologist. But I mean, I will take the object and clean it up and ponder it and very much spend time with a certain piece thinking about who designed it, but also its use as a container, as a vessel. I am hearkening back onto in China when they would make these porcelains, they'd, you know, load them up, carry them. A lot would get broken, they'd get lost in shipwrecks. The notion of plastic arts is an old term, and I find it amusing that my work is made of plastic and I'm still playing with that term.
Yeah.
So it's not frivolous, but the plastics are just as strong as the porcelain, and they also have the clarity and the shininess of a beautifully painted porcelain jar. I guess by doing it by hand, you know, it's the Buddhist in me in taking that time to really cover an object with decorative embellishments and to change it from that single use.
Yeah.
Actually, you reminded me, I did see a cartoon when I was a young person of, and I've never been able to find it on YouTube, and it was a greedy king who lived on an island, and he took everything that he used, he just used once. So a bar of soap, he'd just wash himself and then throw it away. And I found that really alarming as a child to sort of contemplate those things. And I guess I've always, you know, we weren't very wealthy growing up, so we had to measure things out. And I think, you know, that as an adult, I want to use things more and to make do with things and to convert things so that I'm not quite as wasteful. But I'm still part of this consumer culture.
Yes. Yeah.
I still love the convenience of a Mount Franklin water bottle.
Yes.
But then when you go to Mount Franklin and you see Coca-Cola like ripping off this, you know, the artesian water tables are damaged by
the overconsumption.
Yes. So it's this dilemma. And I guess I just tap into that.
Yeah. Now, your exhibition at the Chow Chak Wing Museum in the Penelope Gallery, the space dedicated for contemporary art and an artistic response to the broader collection, is called Applied Arts. It's open to the public now. The opening, unfortunately, was delayed because of the Sydney COVID lockdown, but it's open. We've got visitors coming through. I've already heard some fantastic comments only the other day from some visitors saying how much they enjoyed the show. For our listeners who may not have had a chance to see it yet, how would you describe Applied Arts?
Well, 2 years worth of work. Lucky I had a studio I could work in. And how to describe it? It's, look, I guess I focus on beauty. Like, there's no point in trying, for me, to be trying to make something ugly. It's all about responding to the things that I was attracted to in the museum and which, you know, caught my eye. I've always been a blue and white porcelain lover, so obviously those were the things I gravitated towards first. And then anything shiny.
Yes.
That, you know, I love the gold, in the galleries, in the museums, and I ponder about the monetary value of gold versus shells, which used to be a trading item. And so I guess there's a bit of money in the exhibition as well. Some of the money works are a few years ago that I made Bart paintings of Australian banknotes, because I guess I saw the bark as, you know, it's an ancient tree versus the plastic polymer that we now have today. So I guess I'm interested in the oppositional qualities of materials. It's quite formal in that way.
As you're saying, I've just realised that money does grow on trees when you think of it that way. Each time I go into the space, I am captivated by just how beautiful it actually is, and that interest in aesthetics that you have. Again, has that always been throughout your career? Have you always been attracted to that? You mentioned before shiny things. Has that been something that you find that you're gravitating towards when you think of objects?
I guess so. I mean, the qualities of plastic have that shine. Of course, not when they're dulled. If they've been in the ocean, they get very frosted. But I can draw out those qualities. And I think it is, I mean, beauty does attract. And putting light behind plastics has always been something that I've abused and wanted to explore and expand upon, because it's about this quality. You know, much as I complain about the plastics, I adore them.
Yeah.
And I guess it's the love and the cherishing. By making something beautiful out of something that's designated garbage, then you're fighting that duty, that the designation of that object, and interrupting that, interfering with it. And I suppose I've used a lot of water and light in my work. So I come from a photographic background.
Right.
That was my major. And when I think back of my career when I was at art school, well, the negatives are a plastic, and the paper that you print on is also plastic coated, and then you have the light and the water, and it was somewhere magical that I could make things appear.
You're listening to Object Matters, the podcast of the Chow Chak Wing Museum. My guest for this episode is Sarah Goffman. Now, Sarah, I do want to ask some questions more specific to the Chow Chak Wing Museum collection and the way that you responded to those objects. But before I do, you are a collector in your own personal life, and obviously also a collector in terms of material for your studio and your own creative work. What do you collect, and what are you drawn to personally? And are there overlaps with what you're collecting for creative output, or do you kind of separate the two between my personal collection, my personal belongings, and the plastic and so on that you're collecting to work with at a later date?
I don't think I separate them, no, because I work from home and I'm always looking around my house to sort of, when I'm doing a show, I'm thinking, what works for this? It's like, you know, this net that I want to cast. And I guess I work very site-specific. You know, I respond to that site. And, I mean, the Penelope Gallery was hard because there's no holes in the walls.
Yes.
It's very blank. And all I knew was the history, well, Boyd's exhibition that was here. As terms of collecting, I guess I'm always looking for money or jewellery, one or the other. But, you know, you don't find that much. But, like, when I'm doing a show, I'm out looking for perhaps red things or plastics, things that I can convert or that already have the form that I'm seeking.
Yeah, right.
Or, it's not arbitrary. And I'm not always out looking for things, but I guess I am a gatherer, because I did a residency in Tasmania where I was in the wilderness. There was no rubbish, nothing. But I came home with miles of rocks, and I filled my motel room with rocks. So I am a gatherer.
Yeah.
I can't help it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess a museum is a space where cultural material is gathered. In terms of the processes that you worked towards the Applied Arts exhibition, I know you spent a lot of time in the stores and in the basement of the museum looking at that diversity across the collection. Could you take our listeners through that process of, as you're going through those storerooms, what you're looking for and how you found yourself responding to those items that we may not necessarily get to see from the public's perspective?
Until... Oh, I adored the stores. Because, I mean, things are just jumbled on shelves. They aren't given the precious sort of museological displays. And so I was looking for blue and white china, I admit. But I was looking to be surprised.
Yes.
And I certainly was by seeing the undersides of objects, which, you know, often I do take my cues from Christie's or Sotheby's and I just see one dimension, two dimensions of the works. So I was looking for just what was turning me on, what told a story that I could relate to. And, you know, I was delighted to see Powers' works, of course, and to see them up close and to just see the multitude of them, but the multitude of all of the things.
Yes.
And, you know, the little cushions that things were resting on and the little plastic bags that they came in and and all those things. Like I've always, we were talking about, you know, what do I collect? Well, Ziploc bags is one thing that I've always been attracted to. I mean, I guess they tell a story. They held something, whether it was drugs or somebody's lunch. And there is something, I guess, from who killed Laura Palmer? You know,
Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks wrapped in plastics. That came out while I was at art school. So it did have some sort of impact on me. And I find, just the way art is stored in cabinets is a very exciting thing. So the Applied Arts show is mostly in cabinets or somehow to reflect the showcase, because like it's always been, no matter what you put in a cabinet, it does look beautiful. Mm. It has a rarefied...
You're right, it takes on a very different perspective, doesn't it, once it's kind of sanctified within the space of a display case, that very same object that could have been handled or you know, just on a shelf or on a table beforehand, by suddenly being lit and presented and labelled, does take on a different element, doesn't it?
It's a religious reliquary.
Yeah.
And it's something contemporary put into something, like, I love the old cabinets from the Maclay Museum.
Yeah.
And so to put something new into an old cabinet creates a frisson that I find exciting. Mm. But there is something like a church about the gallery.
Yeah.
Like the black walls and the high ceiling.
Yes.
And
the quiet, reflective.
The quiet, reflective, exactly. Mm. And so it's something which you walk around with, you know, your hands behind your back almost, and contemplating where you can find some solace. I mean, I suppose when I was younger, I used to go to churches a whole lot more when I was traveling, not because I was religious, but because I wanted that peace and that sense of space and also of beauty.
Yes.
I'd look at those stained glass windows and marvel, and, you know, to be able to visit the stores and be so close to objects like that I can touch is absolutely fantastic and rewarding.
That experience of being in the stores then really influenced you going back to the studio and the process of creating?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because I'm religious about art. I really honour the maker, and the older I get, the more invested I am in that object's provenance and the weight of it. Like when I was younger, I took things for granted, whereas now I really contemplate things and I want to handle them, of course. Everyone does.
Yes. Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, I make what I want to own. So my objects are often pieces that I've seen in a museum that I'm not able to get into the showcase and grab, so I'll make a rendition of it. Like I said, it's a prop.
Yeah. That's really interesting too, because it's then you stamping yourself onto it as opposed to buying a replica or in the era of 3D scanning and 3D printing, creating a replica, you are creating your personal replica, if that makes sense.
It is. And so when I'm looking at the decoration on an object and then copying it, I get to see it more closely. And of course, I'm enacting it with my own hands, and I'm feeling the original maker's mark. I mean, I'm a student who's studying these decorative arts, and mine are never perfect. But it's amazing what you can get away with imperfection. Yes. Because the eye doesn't, it sees the whole rather than just this one gesture. So it's really exploring the notion of applied arts to utilitarian objects.
Yeah. Now, look, we've been talking about that relationship with objects on a more holistic level to now. Let's bring it down to one or two individual pieces. And I'm going to start by asking you about the Scholars Table, which we currently have in the Chow Chak Wing Museum on loan from the Art Gallery of New South Wales as part of the opening exhibition auspicious for our China Gallery. But it's an object that you've referred to in your exhibition, Applied Arts. It's an object that you've worked with before as well. So could you talk a little bit about the Scholars Table and what it means to you?
Yeah, that was just the best luck I could have had, was to find that here, because I made a copy of that in 2005 for a show at the MCA in Sydney, and I had it in a tank of water, so it was all plastics and they were weighed down by sandbags in this tank of water. And the pieces on the Scholars Table now are, there are a few that have changed. Yep. But I just felt there was a fantastic synchronicity, and of course I had to display it. And in my piece at the Penelope Gallery, it's got a little wooden table with a granite or some sort of stone stand, which was just something that one of my neighbours threw out only a few months ago. Mm. And I went past, I was like, oh yeah, that's that's fantastic, because I didn't actually make a rendition of the table. The table that I had at the MCA was styrofoam, actually,
yeah, yeah.
And it was destroyed. Having been in that tank for a few months,
yes, yes.
It grew mold and I couldn't keep it, but I kept the objects that I'd had on the surface. It had to be weighed down with lead and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
So I was really very happy to see it here. It's like visiting an old friend as well, when you know it so well and having studied it. And yeah, I mean, that came out genuinely as I'd visit the China galleries at the Art Gallery in New South Wales and just wonder at this marvellous. And having been to China, I went a few years ago and went to Jingdezhen, the porcelain capital, and, you know, saw, only had romantic illusions of what China is now. And, you know, it was a rude awakening. But there were parts of some of the porcelain areas where they still did the old methods and had these beautiful accoutrements.
Yeah.
And I guess I am romantic and nostalgic about the idea of the artist in an ivory tower, perhaps not made of elephant ivory, using beautiful things to make beautiful things and being able to meditate on those things.
Yes.
Like, that is the person that I aspire to be.
One way of communicating with the past, with our ancestors too, isn't it? Like, they've gone, here's a table that was used for this purpose in the past, and we still have that ability to empathise and react with it, and now you've brought it into the 21st century.
Well, I am an actor.
In terms of the Chow Chak Wing Museum's collection, were there particularly, both in terms of objects that are on display, but that time you have spent in our stores, were there particular objects that you've found yourself referring to in the exhibition?
Well, I guess, you know, I do go on about the blue and whites. So you might notice there's not many blue and whites in my copying. And I really wanted to challenge myself with this. And knowing that the walls were going to be black, I thought black, white and ivory, because, yeah, there is a little bit of ivory in that. Yeah, I wanted to change it so that I was looking at them and making a more clear or just something different for my own pleasure, but which I thought would stand out. There are a couple of, there's an original blue and white porcelain in here in the show. Yeah, I guess the shell work, that is really significant to me. The shell just placed on the existing table with the $5 bill in it, that reflects the shell works that you have in the collection.
Yeah, the Kimberley shells that are currently on display in the level one Coastline Gallery.
Yeah, which was so beautiful that I couldn't actually make copies. I tried and everything just turned out into... It turned into rubbish. Maybe in 10 years, I might use them for something else.
Yeah.
There is this recycling that is always going on.
And you find yourself filing away things, going, oh, it's not working right now, but I can revisit that later on?
Absolutely, like a fine wine. If you put it in the cellar for 20 years, it will get better. Mm. And I find making art, the process, I'm not in charge. Like, the materials are. So there are things that I gravitate towards, and there are things... Like, everything is dependent on other things. And I mean, even how the black and white works are displayed, that was with Boyd's tables that were from his exhibition.
Yes,
so
yes.
I really enjoy that play and that recycling and the converting, the transformation of things from one to another. And so it's an alchemy.
Oh, what a lovely word to describe it. For our listeners who hopefully will be able to come and see Applied Arts in the Flesh, what would you like them to take away from it? Would you like visitors to explore the exhibition and discover for themselves, or is there a particular takeaway message, something that you hope that people see and respond to?
As an artist, the best thing you can do is to visit the space and to go out and appreciate the world that you live in. So, yeah, you take from that space this artistic content. Like, you might not even be looking at it, you're just browsing and you know, you take a bit in. But if you can go out and love the world with fresh eyes, then I think the artist's job is done. Because I mean, I make what I make, and I'm not trying to diminish its quality. Like, I recognize the beauty, but it's only through the world's beauty that I've been given this opportunity to make what I make. So we are really linked up together with all of society, and I suppose that's what I'm trying to do. I want us to see the beauty in the world, and to, you know, even the ugliness can be beautiful as well. We have to endure a lot of ugliness, but we are also here. It is a gift to be alive and to see the light.
As you know, the one thing I ask everyone who appears on the podcast is to choose one word to describe, well, normally the object we're talking about, but we've been talking about so many different things today. So I guess the exhibition in this case. What one word would you use to describe?
Open.
What's next for you, Sarah, now that the exhibition's opened? What do you have other shows lined up going forward? What are you working on in your studio at the moment?
I'm working on miniatures, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I thought, oh my God, like, my work is very lightweight, so I can carry it with my pinky, but it also takes up a lot of space.
Yes.
And I happen to be moving, and I would like to diminish my collection. So all those little hand sanitizer bottles and tiny little, you know, when you get drinks on the plane,
yes,
you get the little tiny bottles. I want those.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm working in miniature, so I'm still on the same vein. I don't think I ever have moved off the vein, even though I've worked in formats and video, and it all sort of still comes back to this orientalism that I'm fascinated by.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on Object Matters. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Craig.
Object Matters is recorded on the grounds of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. The Chowchak Wing Museum and the University of Sydney wishes to pay our respect and acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands in which we work. Subscribe to Object Matters on your favourite podcast app and connect with the Chowchak Wing Museum on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. You can also subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter, News Extra, via our website, sydney.edu.au/museum.